Welcome back into the Lads Talking Footy podcast. It's me, Jordan Tana, here with Sam Whitaker as always. And back in the studio, we got Simon Mongi Anderson.
We back, boys. Full squad. Complimentary. Yep, thanks here for we go. Holding down the fort while I was gone.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Oh, never good. Get any of those, though. No. Two pair Mong.
Yeah. Into accountability to kick us off. So tips for the week was 2 for 2. I was 1 for 2. I went back to Warriors. Yeah,
don't be rewriting history.
Your brain was 2 for 2. Yeah. Your heart was 1 for 2.
And then as for best bets, Brian Toto anytime try score into Panthers -3.5 at $2. That came in for me. I stuck.
Wow, nice.
Went away from the three legger that's just been absolutely killing me. And as for the three legger, DWZ and Reece Walsh both anytime try scorers into the Warriors +10.5 at $8.50. I went down there, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was also 1 from 2, and I have to apologize because there is maybe some bias factors that went into my pick. So I will have to formally apologize on behalf of the referee in that Warriors and that Broncos game, because he fucked me over. He fucked the Warriors over. And yeah, 1 from 2, and I got no props. So yeah, that's how I'm going to cope with it. Blame the ref.
Yeah.
Like all the New Zealand fans.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it was incredibly close when it happened, but we will look past that.
Bro, we're coming back into the game.
I know. Yeah. Momentum is a huge thing. And
3 tries is more than 2.
Especially for the Wires.
Yeah, it made a huge difference.
Did you come in with any multis over your weekend that you want to enlighten us on?
No, I took a week off, you know, as some good people need to do.
Okay. Yeah, you're cleansed.
So, yeah, exactly. I'm ready for a big one, though.
Yeah.
Eyes back.
I mean, look, I don't know.
It's only increased the hunger.
I don't know enough about NBA or NFL to make some serious cash holder off the TAB for the next few months. So this is my last chance.
Yeah. No, well, follow us and we'll lead you. You will lead you on the
we'll
wrong path.
We'll lead you to water. Whether you drink or not is up to you.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got
water might be polluted.
Yeah. I've found my own path, map, secret, X marks the spot, oasis in the middle of the desert. That's where I'm going.
Well,
there we go.
He's ready.
So prelim finals review. Panthers defeat the Storm 38-4. This for me is actually the best version of the Panthers yet, I think.
Damn.
87% completion rate in this. They forced 13 errors from the Storm. The Storm made 431 tackles, over 100 more than the Panthers, and missed 50 of them. Penrith kicked almost 200 more meters than the Storm. Ran 482 more meters than the Storm. 6 tries they scored to Melbourne's 1 from Olam. When that happened, I thought that game was going to switch a little bit because that was real easy. You just skin them on the outside. But Leota, Fisher-Harris were absolute dogs. Physical up front. They really targeted Harry Grant throughout this. Jerome Luai, 4 weeks after a dislocated shoulder.
Crazy.
Absolutely incredible. The fact that he didn't shy away from contact at all. Defusing kicks. And he was even running as well, which was
taking
super
the ball
impressive.
To the line.
Exactly.
No reluctance. Yeah.
Nothing. Nathan Cleary, though, absolutely ridiculous. 1 try, 1 try assist, and was just an absolute master around the field. The stats don't show the whole story, but when you've got Luai who's out there on one shoulder and you actually look at the plays, there's quite a lot of times Nathan will play the first man and will come out to out the back to Luai on that left edge. We saw a complete switch in that. And the fact that he was just switching round from the right to
the
left.
The old Cody Walker.
Exactly. And he was just playing it. I think he set up one of Taruva's tries. It was just outstanding from him. To'o, whole different level to wingers this year. 3 tries, 9 tackle breaks, 181 run meters on 19 runs. Well-oiled machine, and you just saw it all.
What's his finals try record? Was it like 9 from 10 or something?
9 tries in the last 5 finals games.
Yeah, 5 finals.
Five finals games.
Yeah. You've got my preview early.
2 back-to-back hat tricks, right?
Yeah.
So
crazy.
Brian Toto was in amazing form. And I tell you what, you've pretty much hit the nail on the head in terms of the old review.
Yeah, sorry.
You've covered like all the players that I wanted to cover. Jerome Luai, I consider him, personality-wise, a bit of a squid.
I rate that afterwards. When he comes in and he just says, I'm built different.
Yeah, it's when you can back it up with the toughness he showed out on that field 4 weeks after a nasty, nasty shoulder injury, and to play the way he played, you've actually kind of earned my respect. Yeah. So
if I'm Jordan Rickey, though, I'm thinking like, fuck you, I'm built different. I'm playing this week.
Yeah, exactly. And Stags as well is also a big hitter. So that shoulder's going to get a real test. I'm going to piggyback off what you said about Nathan Cleary as well. He could potentially be one of the best rugby league players I've ever seen. His awareness and just control and feel of the game is something like honestly, to the level of like a Jonathan Thurston. He is that good, man. And yeah, you said his stats weren't too amazing, but I still find these pretty damn impressive. One try, 18 points, 93 run meters, one line break assist, one try assist, two offloads, and 504 kicking meters.
Yeah.
And I just want to add another take to this because, man, he's just an all-round player. He's kicking both territorially and attacking the goal line is perfect. He's got elite playmaking ability, dangerous runner, solid defender, goal kicking is sublime. I think if he wins another championship, he makes it the three-peat, I'm willing to put him in the top five greatest players that I've witnessed in my generation.
Yeah.
Unless that includes, I can tell you my top five right now. It's got Jared Hayne in it at number five. Yeah. I know that's.
But no, like, it's not. I like
Jared
Hayne
at five. Greg Inglis at four.
Yeah.
Billy Slater at three. Cameron Smith at two and Jonathan Thurston at one. So he'll knock off Jared Hayne and get into that top five if he wins another title here.
No McInnes?
Oh, well, top five grubs.
My top five probably would be exactly the same, but I might have to like sneak Shawnee somewhere and then just for.
Shawnee's getting close.
Yeah, he got
that Dele M. Like, I mean, I still consider him
the got a Dele M or a Chirp,
yeah.
Greatest ever warrior.
Consistent. Like you look at those players in the top five, never really had a very bad season. But there's a
When Jared Hayne came back after America, it was true.
And you look at the quality
on and off the field.
You look at the quality of the sides that those players in the top five have played with, stacked from 1 to 13 and onto the bench.
Yeah,
some of the teams that Shawnee's had to carry have been a bit subpar.
But mind you, when Shawnee's had success, the teams have been pretty good. This team this year is pretty good.
Yeah,
2011 was a pretty strong team.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There's no other players I wanted to highlight, but just in terms of the way the game went and just to highlight some of the team function, like it was close to start with, but there was always danger signs from the way that the Panthers were playing and also the way the Storm were kind of carrying themselves. There was like a few errors that crept in early, just the line speed from both sides in terms of the Storm on defense and the way that the Panthers were playing on attack.
Yeah.
And the things that just kind of stood out in terms of the way that they separate is, you know, just like the collisions, the execution, and like the speed of play from the Panthers is the things that I would just point out as the reason they're in the final this week. They just have this insane standard and never slipped. Whereas you've got teams like the Storm and the Warriors can play like that, but they just can't maintain that for like 80 minutes or start like that.
Yeah, that is exactly one of the points I had as well. And I'm glad you brought up that 87% completion rate stat because honestly, that should have been higher. They kind of took their foot off the pedal when they were up by 30 and it dropped a little bit in the late second half. So
I think they might have.
That could have been 95%.
Honestly. It was almost the whole first half. I think they completed 100% or something like that. Mm. It was absolutely ridiculous. And you're right. It's just the Panthers are just relentless. It's been like that the last couple of years, but this year especially, like when they're playing those top teams, it's a quick play the ball and they just suffocate the fuck out of you with quick returns from the back three. And it's just simple, but they do it right.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah. And they're just all fitting in so well. Like Leota and Fisher-Harris, just absolute
and
beasts.
And leave you off the bench.
Exactly. And then you turn to the defensive end and what they're doing defensively, and then you put Mitch Kenny in that. Like Appy is Appy, but Mitch Kenny knows his role, and it is just defend the fuck out of absolutely anything and just give good service to Cleary and Yao.
And it's not like proper hooker defense. Well, not proper, but like your traditional hooker defense where it's just like kind of be there and good work. Yeah, he puts his shoulder into people and he dominates collisions. So, yeah, I mean, your take about them being maybe the best version of themselves over this dynasty run?
Right now. Liam Martin is outstanding. Yeah. Nathan Cleary has hit experience a whole nother level. Stephen Crichton is out the gate. Brian Toffa is just unreal. Taruva, fantastic. Like, I can't fault anything.
Bro, the pieces, they've lost some good pieces, but the pieces they've managed to maintain, their next elite quality pieces, are starting to get into their prime era of age. Like Cleary's what, 25 now?
Yeah.
Luai's 26. Like they're all getting to that age where they're at their absolute peak mentally and physically. And it's going to be a tough task.
It's a Panthers dynasty.
It is.
100%. Yeah. As for the Storm, they just couldn't get any sort of platform to work off.
Yeah.
The spine was kept really quiet in this one. Nothing really from Harry Grant or Munster when normally you have games like that. And those are the two that sort of break it open. Credit to them, though, I really didn't think that they were going to finish third at all this season. The losses that they had to start the year in terms of that forward pack, it was next man up sort of thing for them as well. Pappy derailed a lot for them at the back end of it. There was a lot of hype coming into it with some X Factor coming through. So, again, hit with injuries, but no gains, no losses for them. They've re-signed Nelson, Garlic, Kamakamika, Katoa, King, Meany, Pezzet, Warbrick, and Wishart. I think there's three there in the Pezzet, Warbrick, and Wishart, which is sort of starting to lock in a little bit of the future.
Yeah.
Pap is also only a few months away from actually getting back into it as well.
The other name you put in that list is is Meany. Like, you know, he had a huge role to play because I think a lot of people, especially Storm, were expecting Pap to play fullback for the full season and play every game. But he stepped in and he's...
What? What, like, play fullback this season?
Yeah.
No, he was injured for ages.
Oh, really? He didn't come back.
Yeah, he came back when he came back, but we expected to see some sort
Everyone
of
was optimistic he would eventually come back.
But didn't he get injured this year?
He came back from shattering his knee and then got re-injured himself by fucking dislocating, snapping his ankle. So he's had two back-to-back nastiest fuck injuries.
Yeah, so I thought Pap's injury, the first one was in preseason this year.
No, it was last year. Yeah, knee collision.
Yeah.
But yeah, as for the Storm moving forward into next year, it's going to be quite interesting for them, sort of where they go to from here. No gains, no losses.
Yeah.
Where does it sort of build?
Well, I mean, I definitely agree with your first point about the fact that the Melbourne Storm still made the preliminary final, considering how much players they lost, especially to the Dolphins with the Bromwich brothers. They lost Brandon Smith.
Yeah.
And they still found themselves third place and one of the better teams in the competition. There was obviously a gap between the top two and the rest
We've
of the field.
We've talked about that the whole season.
Yeah, but they were still way up there. So credit to them, and it just shows you that their franchise is just one of the best in the competition and historically always will be. So
where do you think Penrith got it from?
Yeah, exactly. They've copied the absolute framework of what a good club is meant to be. They still had a great attack. It played insanely fast footy, and I don't know if this is a hot take, but perhaps they had the best big three in the competition in Harry Grant, Cam Munster, and Jerome Hughes.
Yeah.
In terms of like three quality players in a spine, I think it's hard to complement each other so perfectly. Especially Munster and Harry Grant. But you saw in the second half of the season that Harry Grant was actually starting to link up very well with Jerome Hughes. So they still have a lot of positive signs for them. And as long as they've got those three, they're going to be dangerous in the competition. They just didn't really have the accuracy of Storm teams from previous years. And we saw that in this game here. That's kind of what broke them down. Obviously, it's hard to keep up with the Panthers completing at fucking 90%+. But still, they just didn't quite have the accuracy, and that's what let them down against the Panthers. They lost games during the season because they were making a lot of mistakes and giving up a lot of penalties. So if they can kind of work out those little kinks and keep the squad together with no one hopping out and the same sort of core players,
yeah,
we could see the Storm probably in a similar position. Well, that's not a freaking hot take. It's probably probably get a little bit better maybe, and maybe push those top two teams and close the gap from how good they are compared to the rest of them. So
I like it.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is that the Storm of old, if you look at the great era with, you know, like you're talking about with Cam Smith and Billy and that, the thing that really made them stand out was their they weren't afraid to run it early. Like if they had a kick return set and they saw something on the short side or to spread it wide on the second and third inside their own half, they'd do it.
The Storm used to do that last year.
So I mean
they still do it at times.
Yeah, but that was not a part of their game plan last weekend. You know, it seemed like they were trying to play finals footy, which is what the Panthers do. And they kind of went away from their sort of fleary, exciting style that can create those opportunities when they're in the other team's half. But, I mean, like you said, you can't compete against such a high completion rate and then try and play a bit more expansive footy and then get penalized even further. So
It's why the Sharks struggled. They tried to play that expansive footy against teams with high completion rates. They couldn't beat a top eight team.
Exactly. And if it doesn't work, you're not completing. It just shifts. The Broncos defeat the Warriors 42-12. We're through the middle of our, or 3 weeks into our NFL fantasy at the moment, and it's waiver wire at the moment. Just the other night, I jumped on and had a look at the quarterbacks on the market. I was looking for Reese Walsh because I saw his good completion on the weekend. I thought, man, I wouldn't mind picking that up, but
that's the wrong Broncos.
Yeah. Well, you should be on the Broncos. Interesting, though, the NRL, before I get into it, the NRL have come out and have sort of pushed back on new technology being implemented within the forward pass rule. So it's always something that they've sort of, the idea has been pondered around the last couple of years on why can't we incorporate some sort of technology around forward pass. I don't know why the touchy can't stay in line with him, but anyway.
I saw a great take on social media from the, I think it's the Hello Sports guys in Aussie.
Yeah. Was it Willie Mason?
No. Well, it was these other guys.
He's been on fire.
The ones that do like the punters and dribblers stuff. But he's like, instead of gun technology, why don't we just juice the referees to the gills so they can keep up with play?
That's brilliant.
Why you just juice up the refs so they can keep up? I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, that is funny.
What are they going to do? Piss hot? It's not like they're going to tackle anyone.
Yeah.
And then
well, someone will come out in arms about it, like, test the refs, USADA the refs.
But looking back at it, the ref wasn't too far away from the play, and it was so glaringly obvious.
Yeah.
You have to be not looking to miss that.
It was poor fall from the ref, but as a touchy, that is like, you've got two jobs. Make sure they're onside and watch for a forward pass.
Yeah.
Like,
the fact that you can't like use the TMO to adjudicate on forward passes is just stupid anyway.
Camera angles.
Yeah, I know, but like, you can still use the video ref if the ref is unsure or not in line, like doing their job. You should still be able to use the TMO to kind of.
And the fact that they can go back to like, if we're. It's inconclusive evidence we're going with the on-field decision or something. At least give them some sort of play to
but
rule.
The thing is, right, like in with rugby, I'm not sure if it's the same with league, they use project mapping to display ads onto the field. Like they're not painted on the field, but they have them accurately depicted at the angle on the field.
No, they do that in league.
Yeah. Well, so then if you can do that technology for the ads, surely then you can use that same project mapping technology to say, okay, the ball is at this point on the field and then travels forward to this point.
Maybe we need one of the companies to fund that technology, like forward pass projecting by
put some money in it. KFC seems to, I mean, if KFC were funding the forward pass thing, they'd be reviewing it
KFC
every second.
Forward pass check.
Yeah.
But it will be interesting to see what they do, because they push back and they've said that they don't want to open that can of worms, and the fact that they may get more calls wrong than right. And it was funny of the NRL to actually come out with that statement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if you're looking at rugby at the moment and comparing it to league, a lot of the people turning away from rugby is the over-adjudicating, the kind of needless reviews, the stop-starting it. So, yeah, I mean, the lesser infringements, the more enjoyable the game of football is. So
for sure.
Yeah. But
learn from your mistakes and, just not on the Warriors anymore.
Yeah, I know. Just we can't be the learning.
Why are we the martyrs?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, the top two teams absolutely demolished third and fourth by an aggregate score of 80-16. These, unfortunately, are the best two teams in the competition right now, in the Panthers and the Broncos. And that's what we had been talking about through the season. But on the game, Dallin, absolutely fantastic. Two tries in this one. One against the grain off Reece Walsh try assist. Did his homework, but be interesting because this isn't, they obviously played together last season. So I'd like to know how many of those he actually got in training, and he sort of knows what Walsh's tendencies are. And it was, ballsy of Walsh just go straight back to it the next play and just go or run at it and give it to Herbie.
Yeah. Short memory.
Yeah, exactly. Broncos finished with 23 offloads in this one. Just to put that into context, they made 282 offloads in 2023, which is an average of just over 10 offloads per game. So they offloaded over double their average from the year and just tore us to shreds.
Yeah.
And looking at this, I wouldn't read into the offloads beating us. I'd look into the offload game coming into this week.
Yeah.
The fact that they want to play an up-tempo sort of game and they wanted to test that against us because of where it happened in the game as well.
Yeah.
11 line breaks and almost 2,000 run meters. We also missed just over 50 tackles. Reece Walsh, like I said, was outstanding. But for me, Herbie Farmworth was absolutely sensational. Two tries, 7 tackle breaks, 3 line breaks, and a game-high 232 run meters for a center. He's going to be missed next year, and he's going to have an unreal season with the Dolphins. Billy Walsh is as well, absolutely fantastic. And Reynolds played the sort of perfect game and just sat in the middle of it, which was good to see.
Yeah, and I fully agree about their offloading and the effect that it could have on the Panthers, but obviously we're looking at this game, and the effect that it did have on us was devastating because their pace of play just really fucked us up. They were working off the offload super well. They were killing us around the block hole just off those offloads. And then the second opportunities, they would really just run straight and direct into that space and ate huge amounts of meters. And then Reece Walsh was also reacting to the offloads really well as well. And he was just
so quick,
hitting the ball at absolute pace and just playing eyes up footy. And he was making all sorts of opportunities. He had 6 line break assists in this game. So He was really taking advantage of our fractured line. Also 146 run meters, one line break of his own, three try assists as well, four tackle breaks and two offloads. So, man, he really was working well off those offloads. And a prime guy who was doing the offloads was Patrick Carrigan, the Dally M lock of the year. And, man, with the form he's been on in this finals run, fuck, you kind of have to say that's well-deserved. I know Isaiah Yeo had a good season, but Patrick Carrigan was a beast in this game. In his 50 minutes, he had four offloads, 136 run meters, five tackle breaks, and 27 tackles. And, yeah, Payne Haas was also good in that department. Although 42 points is a lot of points to concede, and we did miss a lot of tackles, I was kind of getting frustrated, and maybe it is a little bit of biasness from the refs. I'm not going to keep pointing at the refs, but we were getting a lot of penalties on their exit sets deep in their half that was relieving a lot of pressure for them.
Stole my point.
And
I was
going
to bring that up.
Well, a theory I have on it, besides the refs being biased, is that we might be a little bit overexcited and not controlling the line speed because we're in our first preliminary final in 10 years or something. So maybe that was a factor, but yeah, kind of let the Broncos off the hook and it ended up tossing
an easy
us.
Out.
Yeah.
The thing that I'd say is that it may not be the overexcitedness, but what I think it is the knowledge that the offloads and the pace of play that the Broncos could do was in their minds. So they're like, okay, we need to slow down these tackles. And they weren't making the tackle dominant enough to warrant the slowness of the play the ball. So it was quite obvious when they had a Warriors man holding him down and he was trying to get quick play rather than us being dominant on defense and earning the right to hold them down to slow their ruck speed. So I think that's probably more of it as well. But I mean, it's just the offloads and those penalties were just crazy. I mean, we needed everything to go right for us to beat this Broncos team.
Yeah.
And those things that we just couldn't afford to do, like penalties early in the kick sets and the mistakes trying to exit or the mistakes trying to get to a kick on our exit sets, we just couldn't afford to do any of that. Like, we had to be perfect. And that's just where the gap in the points came from, with those mistakes and those calls coming in.
Yeah, we needed to eliminate the factors that could allow riff-a moments that happened to cost us the game. Like, we did lose that game pretty fair and square. But, you know, there was, you know, momentum starting to shift. And then if we had scored again, who knows? It could have been game on. But
the logs
could
have been
firing. The fact that we put ourselves 24-12 down is kind of on us.
Absolutely.
Absolutely on us. Fine.
Yeah, I mean, it is cliche to say that we're playing against 14 men on the field, but it's like we put ourselves in the position for the ref to rule against us. And, you know, however much tinfoil you want to wear, it's an Australian comp, we're a New Zealand team, and the fan base is in Australia, and that's the best result entertainment-wise for the NRL as a business, for the two teams to be in it. So we can't let them... You know, we can't let those opportunities to increase that.
A lot of credit to the Broncos because they showed in this game and they've showed all season that they are probably the best attacking team in the NRL, and they looked all of that in this game.
It's interesting. I've got something to bring up later on.
I've got some stats as well that
Here we go. Warriors season, though, huge. Movement that swept the country. The culture has completely changed within the Warriors camp. The style of football that they're playing is just perfect. And in 2024, I believe it actually could be our year. Gaining Harris Tavita, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, they've re-signed Bunty, Egan, Johnson, Kossi, Montoya, Pompey, and Tuvanga.
Run it back.
And the only player off contract for them this season is Bailey Sirinen. So the depth is there. They've locked in their key assets. Johnson knows how to play the perfect role within this. The news has just come out today that he's withdrawn from the Pacific Nations.
Fantastic news.
Exactly. So he knows what the bigger picture is moving forward, and the fact that the Warriors
Mad
season
Monday.
Next year.
Oh, I don't actually like that.
I do.
He's
had calf issues.
I like Kiwis footy, though.
Oh, yeah.
I do as well.
I'm a fan. Like, I don't care about all that. I just want to see him more than, like, you know,
he's had
selfishly.
So he's got the injured leg.
Would you want to see more?
He's
Sean
got
Johnson
a brand new,
less
he's got a brand new baby that's just been born. Like,
I
want to
see more
old.
Next year. I want to see finals footy. I want to see
I'm greedy. I'm getting greedy.
I want to see him full of vitamins in the gym in Thailand all summer.
Full of vitamins.
Yeah.
More than he took this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Decker and stuff.
Like Brock Lesnar.
Vitamin T.
I want him looking like Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Chance is playing some of the best footy to date from him. Metcalf will have a full season under his belt to get adjusted to this whole system within first grade. The experience for him will be nonetheless great come the end of the season. The middle is going to be absolutely huge. I can't wait to see where AFB goes from here, because I think it will start to be, it sounds kind of cliche to say, but like the handing of the torch from Tohu to AFB in a way. But I'm just going to call it now top two next year.
Nice. Yeah, I like it.
I don't hate that at all, because you consider what Andrew Webster was able to do to this team from last year to now, going from 15th place to a preliminary final. And then the way this team has just kind of reshaped everything about it in terms of like the attacking structure that we played with. Our defense was greatly improved. We had strong foundation through the middle. I think that we lost in the way we lost because it just wasn't quite our time, and the Broncos have kind of been building and it was their time.
Yeah.
But if we keep the core together like we have, and we continue to grow and gain confidence and gain the support of the nation, because God damn, I have to give credit to our marketing team, because a whole lot of fans came in onto that bandwagon and got behind the team. Up the Wilds became not just a national mantra, but a global mantra. You've seen like the likes of Steve Kerr, Justin Gaethje saying it. So, I mean, credit to the marketing team of the Warriors. They had heaps of good little promo clips on Instagram, like linking the history of the club and the struggles that we went through during COVID to this current team. So anyway, what was the point I was making? Oh, I do agree with you. This could be, I don't know if it's going to be next year, but it might be like the year after, or within the next 3 years, this is our window
to go.
To go. Mm. And I think we'd have all the potential in the world to go and get that elusive championship, man, because it's right there, bro. It's right on our fingertips. The player I want to highlight for the season, and it would be easy to just say Sean Johnson because he was fantastic and he was robbed of the Dally M, but, you know, I've already talked about him in my predicting he would be Dally M sort of thing and covering his season. But a guy I want to shout out is Tohu Harris, because he was an absolute workhorse, absolute ball player. Like, that's kind of an underrated aspect of his game.
I stop you there? Yeah. He made his Kiwis debut at 5'8".
Yeah, and he played a lot there at Storm as well. Yeah. So obviously he's got the skills for it, and he showed it here in his role of 13. Also an absolutely fantastic defender, always working. You saw it in this game. He's constantly working from ruck to ruck. And, you know, he was not 100% this whole season. You can tell by the amount of tape he had on his body, but he always gave 110% effort. So maybe another snub for captain of the year, because I thought he was fucking inspirational this year.
I mean, Warriors have a good history of getting a 13/6. Was it Fleetie Mateo was a bit of that?
Yeah, he was. Mm. He was a bit of a Swiss Army knife off the bench. That was during our 2011 run as well.
Yeah.
He was there.
Yeah, the other players I think I just want to shout out quickly would be Wade Egan, Jackson Ford, and that's about it. I mean, I like those. I think
you did have someone. No, I know you did.
Rocco Berry.
No. I was going to say Dylan Walker. I think he did a lot for us through the middle of the season when we needed him to play wherever, and he did it.
And his impact off the bench was mean most games.
To your original point about the whole Warriors movement, I think it's just the perfect storm with the fact that the Super Rugby competition is dead in the water with a really uncompetitive Australian portion and, you know,
terrible website.
The marketing engine behind the Super Rugby competition is just nothing compared to what's backing the Warriors and also the rest of the NRL. So it is just the perfect moment for the Warriors to have a storming season and get the buy-in from the whole country. I mean, I know it's kind of nice to have those games outside of Auckland to kind of get the rest of the country in, but after this season, make the trip to Auckland. Like, I'm sick of these like away home games. We need the Mount Smart Fortress every time if we're playing at home, because it is just such a difference maker. So if you're a Warriors fan, you're not in Auckland, man. Just like make it a special occasion. Fly up or travel up to Auckland.
They're still gonna have one or two a year.
It is crazy though. If you're not from Auckland and you haven't been to a Warriors game, right now is the time, especially next year. I'm probably gonna look at getting season passes as well.
I was considering it too.
They will be hot property.
I was gutted I didn't this
just
year.
Just as long as we don't go to Napier, bro. They ruin their opportunity by storming the field.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably get away with like a Christchurch game. Down there. They're quite
playing Forsyth.
Oh, that would be insane.
That would actually be
Would that
crazy.
Be the first the indoor zoo. NRL game?
Damn.
Yeah.
I can't
You're
think of any.
Yeah.
That would be a thing
Email
to do.
Email it in.
Yeah. The first indoor NRL game.
Middle of winter. Footy. We said it.
Yeah.
Just don't play, just don't play the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Bird and put that thing in the roof.
Yeah, true. No, but yeah, imagine the zoo going off, bro. Like all the students, middle of, like,
it would be crazy.
O week at Forsyth Bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who would they play?
On the Woodies instead.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tigers.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. No, that is, yeah, I like that. 2023 NRL Dally M Team of the Year. I'll just rattle it off quickly before I get into the points of the actual Dally M race. So Caelan Ponga, fullback. The wings were DWZ and Jermaine Asako. Centres were Stephen Crichton, Herbie Farmworth. Ezra Mammon Johnson in the halves. Payne Haas, Adam Fanua-Blake, Fifita and Martin, and Harry Grant locked up at hooker, and Pat Carrigan came in at lock. I was looking through that. I can't remember exactly what your prediction was.
Got it there.
Yeah. Tell us who you got wrong and who you got right.
Well, my one was not considering the suspension war. So I had Reece Walsh at fullback, which obviously was Caelan Ponga. So I've got no problem with that because Caelan Ponga did come on strong at the end of the season. So that's one change that happened. Dallin Watene-Zalesniak and Jermaine Asako I had right for wingers of the year. Yep. Herbie Farmworth I had as one centre, but Campbell Graham I had as the other centre, which I have no problem with Stephen Crichton because he also had a fantastic year. And Campbell Graham did miss a bit of time with injury, so that was fine. I think I did this with about 3 or 4 weeks to go left in the season.
I think it was longer. I think it might have been four.
Yeah, well, it's still, you know, it's kind of close still. I think there's five players that I got wrong. The halves, I had Sean Johnson and Cody Walker. So Ezra Mamm got that, which Ezra Mamm was good, but I was very surprised that he got it over Cody Walker.
Yeah, you got Reynolds and all of them that are sort of picking up stuff. Yeah. As sort of, I thought Munster would have been second man up after Cody, but
yeah, it's very interesting. But hey, good for Ezra Mamm. He's a young player. I was kind of thinking, did Cody Walker get a suspension at some point that cost him?
Not worth that, nah.
Okay. So, yeah, that was one of the picks that I had a bit of a problem with. The props, I had Payne Haas and Aiden Fanua-Blake. Those were right. Harry Grant, that was correct as well. I had David Fifita and Brighton Nakora. And the way that Liam Martin came on strong at the end of the season, I think in those last 4 weeks, he was one of the best players for the Panthers. So I have no problem whatsoever in taking Nakora out because if you remember, Nakora was kind of like who do I go with?
Yeah.
I guess Nakora.
I remember we were sitting here trying to rattle off names and we couldn't really come up with something.
So I have no problem with Liam Martin taking that spot. And then I had Isaiah Yeo at 13, which was Patrick Carrigan, which I also have no problem with because I think we were weighing up between those two anyway because they both had amazing seasons. So
it's
a pretty good team. Ezra Mamm is probably the most glaring one for me that I kind of question.
Everything else I'm super happy with. Yeah. That's a nice, nice team.
Fuck yeah.
As for the Dally M point system, Fox League released the actual points today. So I'm just going to start off from 8th place because that's where Adam Fanua-Blake came in at 44 points.
Not bad.
Harry Grant in at 7th with 47. Nathan Cleary in at 6th with 48. Scotty Drinkwater with the asterisks in at 50. Daly Cherry Evans in at 50.
Don't eat your boy.
Yeah. Nico Hines in at 54. Sean Johnson at 55. And Caelan Ponga at 56. So ultimately, resting on that Dolphins game has cost him the points of Dally M, which is a shame. But it is crazy to think of what happened to Caelan Ponga at the start of the year.
Bro, he was in Canada.
Exactly. And the way that he's come back into the season, the impact that he had, especially throughout Origin when all of those guys were in camp and not playing their best football, he was just picking up points after points.
Yeah.
And it really does show that just the sole star in a team can pick up the Dally M.
Yeah, so that was a point I was going to make, is that Aiden Fanua-Blake may have been cannibalizing some of Sean Johnson's Dally M points.
Mm.
But still, the way they did it, with it coming down to the very last week and then Johnson getting 3 and then Ponga getting 6, was sus as. Yeah.
And the fact that, like, I know it's just based off the season, we tailed up the Knights at Mount Smart as well. So it's just like,
They didn't get us back, though. I don't know if that was with Ponga, though.
Nah, I mean, just recently in the finals.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, like,
forgot about that because I'm so devastated by the loss.
I know it means nothing, but it just has a weird feeling to it, you know?
Yeah.
Don't do it like the NBA. Do it when the season ends.
I agree with that.
Yeah, it's a shame. Simon, I'll let you rip into them for 2 minutes or so before we move on.
I don't want to get cancelled, bro. I'm going to call my tongue.
They are, bro, the NRL, they've shown their power, bro. They will do some stuff to get you off the airwaves.
I just think it's just not right that a player can miss so many more games than the guy who finished 1 point behind the winner. Like, the man took a holiday to Canada because his brain was scrambled, and he still manages to come away with the Dally M medal. I mean, we've got to know what went on over in Canada, because it seems fishy.
I'd like,
because he came back a changed man.
I'd like to check the games played before you say so many games, though, because Johnson did miss a couple down the stretch, and Ponga was starting to play every game.
When they release a list, like, I'd love to just be able to look back and see, like, Knights fixtures, like Knights, Sharks, Raiders, Storm, and just go, like, see the point system and just, like, see, like, compare those games to his
full
performance.
Full disclosure.
Yeah. Be transparent.
Open the
books.
Yeah. It would be nice to see what the point structure, I don't know if they did show it, but the point standing after every week, because they closed it off, like, quite early
they
in the season.
Do that, yeah.
But it'd be nice to see how it changed, and, you know, the week before the last week, how many points was Shawnee up?
Oi, imagine seeing some shit and it's like Sean Johnson had like 300 run meters and 600 kick meters and then got one down the end point.
Yeah. But yeah, it is a shame. Not to take away from Johnson's season. Absolutely incredible. And it was fantastic to see. But we're on to the big dance. The Penrith Panthers take on the Brisbane Broncos at Accor Stadium, 9:30 on a fucking Sunday. Bring it on to a Saturday. You know, it's just like, fuck the wires, forward pass, there's the final on a Sunday, enjoy work on Monday. But Herbie Farmworth has been named for the Broncos despite earlier on this week his hamstring issues. Cogger has been carried on the bench just like last week as insurance for Luai. So, buckle up. The Panthers are looking to go back to back to back. Since 1966, after St. George won 11 times in a row, only one team has won the premiership 3 years in a row, and that was Parramatta in 1981 from 1983.
Wait, did you say 11 times in a row?
Yeah, stupid, eh? Yeah.
What?
Only the Bulldogs, the Raiders, the Broncos twice, the Roosters, and obviously Penrith have won it 2 years in a row. The last time the Broncos were in a grand final was in 2015 against the Cowboys, where they lost 17-16. And the last time they won a premiership was in 2006 against the Storm. Six in total for them as a club, while Penrith only have four. 42 games between the two of them. The Broncos have won 24 and the Panthers have won 17, with one draw between them. The Panthers have won 8 straight finals matches and have won 5 of the last 6 games against the Broncos. The Broncos have only won 3 of their last 9 finals matches also. Key matchups in this one, Stephen Crichton's last year with the Panthers. They may not reach the pinnacle next season, and for me, they'll be wanting to leave everything out there for the brothers within this team. The Broncos have scored the most tries in 2023, but the Panthers have scored the most points, retained the most possession by any team in 2023. They've completed the highest percentage all year at 83%. They've led the NRL in post-contact meters and tackle breaks. They've run the most meters off kick returns and in general play. They led the NRL in try assists, were second in the NRL in total kick meters, and they were 14th in total errors made, where the Broncos, actually, they were second in the competition.
All of those are Reece Walsh.
Yeah, like straight up going through it all. Yeah. This system works great. They've been here before. They know what it takes. This is the big stage. And for a lot of those young Broncos guys, I'm a little bit worried that the lights might be a bit too much. Walsh has shown that he can play absolutely outstanding on the big stage, but the chin, he's in unreal form. Panthers, for me, they'll win this in 2023.
Ooh, okay. So, your odds. You have the Panthers, the grand final favourites, $1.62, and the Broncos, the $2.30 underdogs, with the line sitting at +3.5. So, this is tough, man. This is the absolute story of defence versus offence for me, and also close to split these guys this year, because they were one and one in the regular season. Broncos winning the first one 13-12 and the Panthers winning the second one 15-4. So tight, close scoring affairs. The Panthers averaged 12 points per game conceded the whole season. So just 2 tries they're conceding every game. Whereas the Broncos averaged 27 points per game scored. So they're an offensive powerhouse, but I'm going to lean with you, bro, because it's always been said that defense wins championships, and the Panthers also averaged 27 points per game scoring, like you laid out. They're the top point scorers in this competition. Whereas on the other side, the Broncos concede 16 points per game on defense. So if you're looking just purely at the point scoring stats, the Panthers have the edge, man, and it's defense.
And it's on the edge. They have the edge.
Exactly.
As well.
And that's another point I was going to make. Their goal line D is impenetrable, and the edges defend so well. I know Tago had that moment of a little bit of vulnerability against Justin Olam, who is hard as fuck to tackle already.
Fair enough.
But usually they're really good. And an opportunity I see here, because Reece Walsh does like to push the pass, and DWZ got an intercept.
Bro, this is exactly what
I thought. DWZ got an intercept last week.
Who does it in the finals?
I was going to say, it is not out of the realm of possibility for him to go back-to-back-to-back intercept tries, Stephen Crichton. Yeah. So I think Stephen Crichton could get an intercept try here. Can the Broncos' offloading potential maybe cause some havoc on the gang tackling of the Panthers? Yes. Mm. If the Broncos do win, it is going to be spectacular. And it could be a huge momentum thing where they kind of run up a score and everyone's like, holy crap. But how can you bet against 12 points conceded per game throughout the regular season? I'm going to back the Panthers to win this. I've got Broncos D also being pretty good. So I like the unders here at 38.5. I say we're going to be locked up with a couple tries each at halftime with Cleary and this fit Panthers outfit kind of adding a few tries and taking over in a tight second half to win about 22-12. So my same game multi that I've got for you guys, do you have that score as well?
Awfully close.
A same game multi that I'm going to run, trying to predict everything on the nose here. I've got Brian To'o to score a try in the match, Selwyn Cobbo to try score a try in the match, Stephen Crichton to score a try in the match, Nathan Cleary, Clive Churchill medalist, under 38.5 points in the match for both teams, and the Panthers winning 1-12 to pay out $226.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's asking a lot, but that's just sort of the things I can
You've
see happening
one
in
game.
This game.
You don't have four or five games to split $10 on everywhere.
Exactly.
Go all
load up.
Yeah.
Load up.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, hey, JT, it was crazy that I knew you were going to come with some defensive points because, like you said, defense wins championships. And I think that's going to be the case here for both teams. It's going to be a very low scoring affair. I just wanted to say it's awesome that it's two healthy squads. You could imagine how like underwhelming this would be if one of the two teams had come in with lots of injuries and they weren't fielding their best side. Like, this is going to be
as good as it gets.
It's going to be the best rugby league game of the year by far, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of how this game plays out, I envision the start's going to be brutal. I don't think many points are scored in the first half. I'm going to say one try each in the first 30 minutes, with the Panthers getting over late in the first half to be up by a try. I see then the Broncos mount a comeback, scoring one to level it or bring it close depending on the goal kick and where they score. Then the Panthers score two more to seal the deal with a 24-12 or 22-12, depending.
Okay.
So
yeah.
That's exactly
nice.
Where I
Kumbaya.
Had it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Clive Churchill will be between the two players that are running the cutter. So, you know, if the Broncos win, it goes to Reynolds. If the Panthers win, it's going to Cleary. Unless, and I saw this, I'm not going to own it. I can't remember who mentioned it. If Isaiah Yao has a fantastic performance, I think he could potentially get the Clive Churchill over Cleary. But I mean, the front runners are the guys in the halves. I'm picking it goes to Cleary. My same game multi is nice and juicy. Same unders, old similar unders. I'm going under 39.5 points. Last score type's a conversion. Panthers the last team to score. Panthers have an 11-plus winning margin. Arthurs and To'o goes over for a try, and that will give you $121 return, so $10 gives you
$1,200.
Okay, try scorer for me, Stephen Crichton has scored a try in all three of his finals appearances. He's a big game player. Like you said, he will have been watching footage on that Reece Walsh cutout pass. Anytime try scorer in this one is at $2.70. For me, winning team, Panthers, 1-12, $3. Clive Churchill, I really was tossing up with Stephen Crichton on this one because I feel like he's going to have that big game being his last one.
Yep.
But this is Nathan Cleary's time, and I want to lock him in there at $3.40. And the magic multi that I'm going with is I've copied and pasted on you almost. So Panthers 1-12, Brian To'o, Stephen Crichton, Selwyn Cobbo, all anytime try score at $29. Cobbo, I feel like they're going to go straight back to that side where they went down. The Warriors went down with DWZ. They stripped it real easily. Stephen Crichton.
And also just the matchup for Cobbo. He's got a lot of try scoring potential because the Broncos do favor that side, and he has a height advantage over Truriver as well.
Exactly. Mm. Stephen Crichton, huge in these moments. I just feel like he's just that guy that's going to score. And Brian To'o, the stats don't lie. He's absolutely incredible in this one. Before we move on to the Rugby World Cup, Mad Monday, we've all picked the Panthers. Who do we think is going to have the stupidest performance? I'll go first. I reckon it's Bizza. He's boys with Crichton, and he last year he proposed after the game. So I feel like he was not really, you know, he proposed to his wife and then said, sweet, catch you later. But he wasn't off the leash fully. So his boys leaving, three in a row. He's been funny as fuck all season. I reckon Bizza is going to let that hair down and go wild.
Yeah, well, that is a good funny pick because he is the funny man of the NRL, and I could see him doing a whole bunch of antics that get him famous on social media. But I'm going to go the opposite direction. I think someone that might have a shocker and might get a little bit too pissed and start talking into his Instagram story and saying, like, I told you I'm built different and just having as Jerome Luai. I think he's going to start talking his shit loud and proud with his chest out and remind everyone who he is. In maybe a cringely squid way, like he knows how to do. So I'm going to say Jerome Luai has the best / worst Mad Monday.
Yeah, that was going to be my pick. But just to pick someone different, I'm thinking it's the guy who's, he'd be in the Broncos drowning his sorrows. And that'd be Reese Walsh.
Oh, okay.
You know, cause he could go crazy.
Was it him that was in? No, it was Ponga in the bathroom stall.
But he got caught with a bag too.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think Reese Walsh is going to be the one to be like, all right, season's over. Didn't quite get it done. Drown my sorrows.
Sniff my sorrows.
He's gonna go hunting in the bottom of a plastic baggie for that chip.
As long as he doesn't come out with it again and finishes it wherever he is. But it's gonna be crazy. As much as I love the grand final, when I'm on my phone at work on a Monday and I'm seeing what those cunts have just gotten up to all night and seeing like Fisher Harris, Kickout, still in the uniform at the pub, going hard, calling them your daddy and like fuck the Eels and pretty much like I just want to see chaos.
The best one was 2020. I followed Cameron Smith and Brandon. Oh, not Cameron Smith. Cameron Munster and Brandon Smith.
Yeah,
and they were still going like trouble. Weeks later. Well, not weeks, but like 5 days later at least. I was like, damn.
Yeah, they were. That was actually funny. And like the cheese is funny with the way that he sort of like produces it. And they were just like clowning each other and stuff. It's like that whole like week is just fun of just seeing what they get up to. And it's like the ending of sort of like, it's kind of like an ending for them as well with this team with Crichton moving on. So either way, they're going to get up to some mischief.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, right? Because you think about all these guys are in their mid to late 20s, early 30s. And if you're just an average sports fan, you know, like the weekend antics is what you all love to do. But these fellas for like 30 weeks straight and even longer because of preseason are the most professional, well-drilled athlete. Maybe a little bit of antics in between when they've got a week off or whatever. And they just, all of a sudden, they've just got no responsibilities. They've got all the money and all the resources to just have the time that everybody at home would love to have.
And so, all the happiness to just.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all the excuses in the world to justify what goes on. So, I mean, but the media just is, you know, insatiable for a good story. So, of course, they're going to be troweling social media looking for any sniff of something to put in the headlines.
Yeah, for sure.
Any Valentine Holmes moments.
Oh, I mean, and the thing is,
that like, was given, though. Yeah. That was,
these club owners.
We follow him, and I saw that on his story myself. And I was like, what are you up to?
You screenshotted and put it out there, didn't you?
No, you're the leak.
No, but I mean, these club owners are getting smart to it. They're wisening up, you know, and they're trying to get these people to have a bit of a closed affair. But I mean,
they want to go to the house, close the doors, have some fun.
Well, there's something about, was it Manly ended up at Matty Johns' house? Cooper brought the team back.
Those boys get up to mischief. Rugby World Cup. So France fed Namibia 96-0. They will temporarily lose halfback Dupont. Until I believe what it's looking like is the quarterfinals, where it has been said today he will be wearing a mask. I actually saw a funny meme on it all. It looks like we are going to see the Bane mask come out for him. So it'll be interesting to see what he wears. Rattling off the other ones, Argentina get win number one, defeating Samoa 19-10. 18-0 draw between Georgia and Portugal. 71-0, England get over Chile. Andrew, he finished with 5 tries, just shy of the World Cup record for tries scored within a game. Ireland.
Who's got the record, Simon?
Most tries?
Yep.
Jonah Lomu.
No, Mark Ellis.
Yeah. Ireland, 13-8 over South Africa. Scotland, 45-17 over Tonga. That was actually kind of looking like a tight contest up until 20 minutes, and then it sort of started to go away. Wales, Historic win 40-6 over the Wallabies, and Uruguay defeating Namibia this morning 36-26. So we take on Italy Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Sam Whitelock, cap number 149. He will overtake Richie McCaw, but we'll touch on the two games I think you'll probably want to touch on quickly in this one. And we'll start with Ireland, South Africa.
Yeah.
Super impressive. We talked about it off air in France when we were struggling. We're reverting back to the kicking game a lot. Ireland, under pressure from South Africa in this one, they just held the ball. They just starved them of possession. And they were having negative phases, but they just kept going and going and going. Yeah. And the way that they got to an edge was just with their looping passes. And partway through the game, they shifted Bundy out there so that they had a strong ball carrier out there that could break game line. And super, super impressive from Ireland.
And this game was definitely the highest quality game of the tournament. You can tell these are the best two teams in the competition. 13-8 is a perfect reflection of the defenses of both of these teams. I mean, they had their moments of breaking each other's line, but for the most part, it was rock solid defense. And especially the Irish, who probably gave, I didn't check the territory stats, but they probably lost in that department because South Africa was kind of, you know, had a
42-58%.
Yeah, and it felt like that in the game. And Ireland were just brave and confident and held them out, never wilted. And then as soon as they got down their end and had their opportunities, they'd make the most of it by knocking over their penalties, which South Africa, a traditionally good kicking team, was not as good with, right? Mm-hmm. So they're probably waiting for Andre Pollard to come back because I'm assuming he has a better boot than both De Klerk and Lebok.
Yeah, so more reliable, and he's been in these situations a lot more as well.
So honestly, this result could have still gone either way. South Africa could have still come away with this result if they had got some kicks. But damn, the story for Ireland to get this win.
It was a real statement.
And they just look like the most confident, well-oiled, well-prepared team in the whole competition. Super fit. Their prop didn't come off till 70th minute, and he was working. Super impressed by Ireland, man.
Yeah, Ireland, they're a team that understand the Rugby World Cup's a campaign with several small stages along the way. Yeah. It's not, an individual game after game. You have to prepare for the whole thing as a whole unit, but then also to break it down into these sections and realize that there's going to be peaks and troughs in your performance, in your intensity, but you still need to maintain a decent level of work ethic to get every result to go your way.
You put that perfectly.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfectly.
But just some stats I'm looking at now to back up the fact that Ireland played fantastically. South Africa almost doubled the amount of meters carried with less runs, more carries over the gain line, just slightly more defenders beaten and offloads. So it seems like South Africa were dominating the game with the ball in hand, but just couldn't get it done.
Nah, it was played as a typical cliche sort of thing, but the game was played in the middle of the field for a lot of it, and that's where it was broken and won and lost.
Yeah, Ireland are honestly, they're reminding me, this might be big boots to fill, but they're reminding me of what we were like in the mid-2010s. Mm. Like, just the
maybe not the, like, attacking prowess.
Yeah.
But
a little bit less on attack. Maybe a little more on D, though.
Yeah. I agree. And if you haven't listened to the Wayne Smith podcast, he did say Ireland is a team to watch in this one as well. Wales, historic win. 40-6 over the Wallabies. Eddie Jones, well, he said before this World Cup that they're not going to France to eat the croissants, but unfortunately that is exactly what he will be doing, and they will be sour croissants for him. Sonny Bill Williams has come out and absolutely flogged him after the game.
Yep. Dropping the secret news about, I don't know if it was secret, but the whole thing about him looking at a new job.
It's not secret. So
was that well known?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Drew Mitchell, Matt Gitto, and Adam Ashley Cooper run a podcast in the South, similar to that All Blacks front row one, going through it. Drew Mitchell absolutely blasted him. I think it was a week before this one. There were videos of him enjoying the game before this, and then partway through it, they were panning back to him, and he was not having a good time.
He looked distraught.
Yeah, it's such a shame for Australian rugby, and the fact that, you know, Australia is a prestigious nation, and they're not getting it right at all. Eddie Jones, coming into this World Cup, he had met, there'd been discussions with Japan, with him taking over after his time with the Wallabies, and I believe he had some sort of deal with them throughout the World Cup as well. He hasn't been upfront about it at all. He's done his gay shit in the fucking media whenever they've asked him, and don't know what you're talking about, mate.
Like,
it's just,
I'm done with these questions.
Yeah. It's shit form from him. It's such a shame. Quade Cooper coming, well, before this whole World Cup campaign, he tore his, I believe it was his Achilles or his AC. He had a significant injury in Test rugby and did everything that he could. I follow him on social media and see everything that he's doing, his training. He did everything he could to prepare for this World Cup, and he's sitting at home and they take 110 away with him. Michael Hooper, injured nonetheless. I think they had three or four players injured that they took over with him. It's real weird. You feel like that these are these leaders within Australian rugby that are making some sort of voice or coming against Eddie Jones on a lot of stuff, and it's just not being done right. It's just a shame. And to top it all off, Joseph Suoliti, who's signed a $5 million deal with Australian rugby, has come out and said there are loopholes within his contract and he may go back
on this as well.
So, I mean, if it doesn't get worse for Australian rugby with this, it's going to get a hell of a lot worse, because Australian grassroots is, with the divide between league and union, a lot of those league boys are poached from First 15. And then when you have these guys that then aren't coming back to the game, it's just, it's shit. They're in trouble.
I'm going to say, I know that there's other teams that are considered tier one nations like Wales, Ireland, Scotland, who have had their absolute dog days, but their expectations are not as high as Australia. Yeah. This is the darkest period a tier one rugby nation has ever gone through right now. Australia is in the absolute dog days, man. And it is a reflection to their preparation for this World Cup, because they just shoehorned Eddie Jones in, who is a controversial figure to begin with, and he is not afraid to just mix everything up to get it the way he wants to get it, to follow his vision, and he's mixed it up, and he's fucked a lot of people off. He's fucked a lot of important voices in Australian rugby off, in your Michael Hoopers, in your Quade Coopers, some people that have upheld the identity of Wallabies rugby. He has annoyed them, and
legends of the game.
Well said.
Legends of the game. And you can see it on the field as well. They're not playing with confidence. They're not playing with a tactical identity. They don't know what they're doing on the field. They don't know when to clear it. They don't know when to run the ball. They don't know how to attack rucks. It's just really bad for Australian rugby now. And
I want to know what Steve Hansen did with this as well.
Yeah. Well, he's gonna say sabotage?
Yeah.
It's the only effect I could see, but in this game, yeah, it's just a reflection of everything that sort of happened with their team. Wales are pretty good, though, I will say. 40-6 is... 6 is a reflection of how bad Australia is. 40 is a big score and a reflection of how good Wales might actually be in this World Cup, and a testament to how good Warren Gatland is as a coach, because he's been kind of shoehorned back into Wales as well, and he's obviously had great effects because he's been with that program for a long, long time. So, really, really kind of disappointing, because I'm not an Australia fan at all.
I like the Wallabies, though. I do like the Wallabies. I like to watch the Wallabies. I'd rather watch, obviously, New Zealand, and then I'd say Wallabies followed by South Africa, just because...
I don't know about South Africa.
It's just our sort of, like, brother name. I'm talking Southern.
In terms of the second teams that you sort of support.
Yeah, and it's just a shame. It's just, they're dead in the water right now. Mm. And before we go to you, one thing that I did see is ever since South Africa left the Super Rugby competition, we have seen New Zealand rugby suffer some of its worst losses at the moment. Yep. We've seen Australia absolutely plummet at the moment, and they've moved over to the Northern Hemisphere. And what have we seen? The Northern Hemisphere rise to the competition. Yeah. So out with the Wallabies, in with Fiji, I say.
Well, we do need to... Sorry to keep jumping in, but we need to do something to reform our competition for international rugby down here, because it is, honestly, the gap is just starting to be way too big.
I think it's
money. We are on an island. We're on a huge island. Yeah. There's no other way to say it.
We're isolated.
But, I mean, Sammy, you said Sonny Bill's comments. One of the things that I think really struck to me, I was like, oh, wow, I've never really had someone say that before, was – He made a point to think, you know, the young players in the Aussie team are going to have to carry this result and this performance for the rest of their careers. Yeah. You know, they are the team that went to a World Cup and performed poorly. And one thing that I don't know if anyone else has said it, but the first country to win, what, multiple World Cups and then get knocked out in the pool stages.
England lost in their own home country. They didn't make it out of the pool. Oh, right. But they've only won it once.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Australia is definitely the most prestigious team to not make it out of the pool round.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
And then the only...
It's not over for them.
Well,
like,
it's a mathematical chance. It is. But Fiji need to lose both their games, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then...
And bonus points come into play. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing, I mean, it's just
Portugal and Georgia. Portugal's not bad.
But I mean,
I saw a meme of that. Sorry.
There you go.
I saw a meme of that black guy like hiding behind the tree, like looking at his chops, like Portugal right now looking at Australia.
Imagine,
bro, that would be crazy.
That's dumb.
If I'll just chuck on some yellow tinted glasses for a second and just say the only thing that might save the Wallabies is if they're doing some sort of big brain long term thinking and say, we're hosting the World Cup next. There's no point putting a team with Cooper and Hooper in there to make the quarters or the semis and miss out on a chance to blood some of these young guys in so that when it comes back into Australia, they are just, you know, just have this weapon team that's been there before and played at this world stage. So, I mean, if that was their plan, I mean, that's good on them, but it's pretty embarrassing at the moment.
I agree with you 100%, and that is sort of what they've gone with. But when you look at that, if we're blooding in our young guys to play in the pool play against Portugal and Georgia, what good is that doing to them? They need to be playing in these bigger moments and coming off the bench and getting experience that way.
A test against England in the quarterfinals. Exactly. A test against an Argentina.
When it matters, do or die. That's your experience. I do agree, and that's what they've done, but it's just fucking backfired, and it's sad. And for Super Rugby, I think it is money, because we saw a lot of New Zealand guys this year, names are escaping me at the moment, that have asked for to be able to go and play over in these European leagues, make more money and still be eligible for the All Blacks, because the money is there and they don't want to, like, the money, it's not the same in here and the travel and all of that kind of stuff. So something's got to become enticing to them, because
There's a lot of decisions for Southern Hemisphere rugby unions to make over the next 4 years.
Absolutely. And it starts from
training
the top
in a bad direction.
I agree.
They just need to look at all these other sports and just see the way that they're evolving to maintain the quality. Like,
it's jersey just, sales, heritage stuff, getting people to the game,
some proper marketing, betting, some better stats departments and all that kind of stuff, so that people can actually have an educated following of what's going on. But and you got to let these players get the money, because you know, inflation's a thing, bro. Like, you know, these players, it's so hard to turn down these contracts from Japan and Europe. But I mean, we've just got by on the allure of the black jersey for so long, and it's fading because rugby league's becoming more prominent. These other sports like basketball, soccer, and things like that are taking off in New Zealand. So that's taking talent out of the pool at school age. Yeah. So these players aren't idolizing the black jersey and making a long-term decision to stick with rugby from the school age level. Yeah. And we're just losing so much talent because of it.
Yeah. That's funny that we've just turmoiled from the Wallabies shit into we can't be like that.
We're looking at our current World Cup performance and seeing some warning signs.
Yeah, yeah, like 100%.
We need to turn shit around quick.
Yeah. Anyway.
Good segue.
NFL. Player performances.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about like quick picks.
Quick picks, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got Samoa versus Japan.
Samoa. I'm still high on them.
Yeah.
I picked Samoa by... Oh, no, I picked Japan 13+. Sorry.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a hot take.
Yeah, no, I think Japan are looking as this as like a marquee performance to come away as, you know, this is what we did at the World Cup. We smoke Samoa.
Okay. That's you haven't watched any games.
No, I haven't.
I've gone Samoa to beat Japan by 3 points. So I'm trying to pick everything on the nose this week.
Nice.
New Zealand versus Italy, the big one.
We have named a very, very strong team. Yes. I am super impressed with it. The only thing that I will question a little bit is we've still got three fucking first fives. Figure out who's got the keys and put Will Jordan at fullback, please. Yeah. All Blacks by 30+.
Woo, okay. Statement. Simon?
I mean, it's a fantastic squad. And I've just got here, you know, considering the teams, every team plays phenomenal against the ABs. I see Italy putting up a bit of a performance, but I still think we pile it on eventually. I've got an exact score on the nose of 48-15.
Ooh, okay. How much is that points
33.
Wise? 33. I've got New Zealand to beat Italy by 23.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
Okay. Argentina versus Chile.
Argentina.
Argentina 13+.
I've got Argentina by 47.
Wow.
Nice.
Fiji to beat Georgia. Fiji versus Georgia.
Yeah.
Well, there's my spoiler. Yeah. I got Fiji to beat Georgia by 17.
Yeah, Fiji 13+.
Bulla.
Yep, Bulla Vanaka. Scotland versus Romania.
Yeah, Scotland.
Yeah, Scotland.
I've got Scotland by 52.
Nice.
Australia versus Portugal.
I'm going to sit behind the corner and look out and say, The Wildebeest game.
Oh, yeah. You wanted to. Yeah. You took, well, you nearly took Uruguay that one time and it paid off for you. Which, this is better than that.
Yeah, I think this is actually going to be quite close for them because of the feeling in camp. They're checked out, the negativity around them. It's either going to be like outstanding or quite close, and I think it's going to be quite close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, was it Portugal against Georgia? No.
Portugal has had a draw with Georgia, and they lost game. To Wales 28-8.
Yeah. But I mean, Georgia also took it to the Wallabies a little bit. Yeah. But
Wales scored a late try. It was 21-8 for a long period of that game.
But I watched that game against Georgia, and Portugal choked it. I mean, they should have won that. They should have locked it up.
They did.
They had a penalty to go ahead late, and then they gave away a penalty trying to exit. And then only just managed to get the draw.
But they were all over Georgia, though. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it all leads to Australia 13+.
Okay. And I've got Australia by 18.
Yeah.
South Africa versus Tonga to close out the round.
South Africa.
Yeah. South Africa by 60+.
Whoa.
Yeah.
60?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I think they pumped them.
I mean, that's not like out of the round, but I think it is still a stupid pick. Honestly.
we'll be here in a week's time seeing who's
South Africa by 31. Nah, Tonga's pretty good, man. They've got some quality talent.
And it's a physical team up against a physical sort of team.
Tonga usually lost against South Africa as well. I know at one World Cup was 30-25.
Mm. I think they're getting humped.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Hot take.
Yeah.
I mean, South Africa just lost to Ireland. I think they're going to be hot.
Oh, okay. Good factor.
True. Yeah.
Good factor. Still don't agree, but good factor.
Into the NFL. So we'll kick it off with player performances that impressed us. I hate what's going on around the NFL at the moment in terms of the Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift saga. But
I love it.
You love it, boy.
The player performance, the player performance that impressed me this week was Taylor Swift. There was a 400% spike in Travis Kelce jersey sales. Kelce's podcast ranked number one overall in Apple Podcasts.
Holy hell.
383,000 Instagram followers. He went up. 24.3 million viewers watched them play last weekend, a 3x increase in Chiefs searches on the web, and the Chiefs sold more tickets in a single day since the start of the season. I don't know about that, but Taylor Swift was impressive. They absolutely tailed them up off the back of it, but as for my actual player that impressed me, CJ Stroud. I'll keep it short.
I thought you were going to go a little brother DeAndre Swift.
20-30 completion per attempt in this game for him. 280 passing yards. He had 2 touchdown passes versus the Jags on the weekend. He has 906 passing yards in his first 3 NFL starts and is the 3rd player joining Cam Newton and Justin Herbert to throw that in their first 3 NRL games. Oh, yeah. Cam Newton won MVP as well. So that is elite company for that guy right now.
Yeah.
Exceptional talent.
And he's looking like an out-and-out rookie of the year so far. He is, he's looking like the most real deal out of all those quarterbacks. I know Anthony Richardson started the year pretty good with a dual threat running ability as well, but I'm liking CJ Stroud. Has he thrown a pick yet?
No.
Damn. Mm. Okay, so Texans actually stumbled across something because they've been struggling for a while now. Player who impressed me, Devon Achane, Dolphins. First real game of the season for him, and I thought he was the best on show in the Miami 70-20 destruction of the Broncos in a game full of stars. So to say he was the best on show is, you know, impressive in a game like that. 51.3 fantasy points, 234 total yards, 204 of them rushing, and 4 touchdowns. 2 were little gift passes from Tua, no-look passes. Sorry, dropping stuff.
That was that was nice. If you search up on YouTube the highlights from that, because Tua hit... It was like a nice little sort of socket pass kind of thing that he did.
Yeah.
He saw the defense come in, looked straight at him, and just shoveled it straight to him. It was real slow.
Did that twice as well. So shout out to the Broncos defense for making that happen. Yeah. But yeah, he's a 3rd round rookie that ran a 4.32 40-yard dash, which was on full display in this game, especially on his last touchdown, absolutely blitzing the D for 67 yards, has really fast-moving feet, and he's got really good start-stop ability as well, which I saw him being quite dangerous when he caught the ball and ran after that as well. So,
2-way running backs.
The future of this league, man. I don't think this performance is a fluke either. I think you can see him getting more snaps. I don't know if he's going to be the running back one, because Raheem Mostert has been in fantastic form all year as well. But, man, he might have just jumped over Jeff Wilson, who Brad's been pretty high on, and taken that second running back spot.
Great
off of him. Yeah. Yeah. I think he's 47. He commentates. Like, yeah. He shouldn't be a running back anymore.
He bowled for the Black Caps too.
Yeah. I did know that.
I like that you said that this isn't the last that we'll see from him throughout the season, because they will be looking to the future with him.
Yeah.
And Green Bay comes to mind straight away, and the balance that they have with AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones. And I really like what Miami might unlock with them here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was that all you had for that?
Yeah, that's all I got for him, man. Impressive player.
Team performance that impressed me. Arizona Cardinals. The Cowboys was a lock in a lot of my multis last week.
Yep.
And the Cardinals picked them apart. One of the best defenses in the comp gave up 28 points and 222 rushing yards on the day. Dobbs didn't throw a pick the entire game and had a pretty good completion rate per attempt as well. Super impressed by the Cowboys, because I saw all the stats in the BR betting.
Cardinals.
That, yeah, they released. Oh, sorry. The Cardinals. BR betting released all their stats from the weekend, and the Ravens, the Cowboys, just absolutely folded a hell of a lot of them.
Yeah,
and
I saw that too.
The Cardinals folded all of mine. So yeah, credit to them. They won't get many this season, but that's a hell of a scalp to take.
Yes. Cardinals, impressive running game, and it kind of exposed a potential weakness in the Cowboys' defense. Like, they're good
Michael
everywhere
Parsons
else.
Michael Parsons got his eyes on the QB.
Yeah,
but
he ain't stopping James Conner. So impressive by the Arizona Cardinals. I thought they were dead in the water. I thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the competition. But these last
Flightless
2 weeks,
birds.
These last 2 weeks told me they've got a little bit of wings. And that Dobbs is pretty good as well. So shout out the Cardinals. The team that impressed me, I'm going back-to-back with Miami Dolphins, because how could you not? Scored 10 touchdowns in that 70-20 demolition of the Broncos that I mentioned before. They've scored 130 points so far this season, and the 70 they scored in this one game is more than 15 other teams have scored the entire season.
Wow.
So they're outscoring, just in this one game against the Broncos, half the league.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, how bad are the Broncos?
The Broncos are pretty bad, and this might have exposed how bad they really are, but they're 0-3, and
Broncos country is not riding.
They're not riding. They're nothing like the Brisbane Broncos. They're struggling right now. But the Miami Dolphins might possibly be the most explosive offense of all time, and definitely one of the fastest, because they have the 6 fastest ball carrying speeds for the entire league this season. 3 by Tyreek Hill, 2 by Devon Achane in this game, and 1 by Raheem Mostert, all clocking over 21.5 miles per hour, which is about 34.6 kilometers an hour. In pads.
Wow. I thought you were talking about like the 6 fastest dudes in the NFL. And I was thinking, that's cheating.
Well, they've got the 3 fastest and who have clocked the 6 fastest times. So.
And a penguin that's ready to waddle soon.
And he's up there too. So this team is crazy fast. It's an offense like no team has ever seen before. That's why I was cutting Sam up and Madden just before we came live.
you definitely were. It is crazy though. They've figured out what they can do. Their offensive line is absolutely second to none at the moment, where they can hold to it, they can protect him for one, and they can give him enough time in the pocket to find these guys. And they've just got electric little fellas that are just so nippy and snippy, and they'll cut you up. And in terms of Tyreek Hill, they're playing at home in this one. After he scored the touchdown, he jumped into the crowd, was having like a full-on party in there, and they had to go and like pull him out. Everyone right now
it's happy
right
in South Beach, man. Everyone's behind South Beach. And the guy who I mentioned before, Devon Achane, his running mate was also fantastic in this game. 4 touchdowns for him as well, 142 total yards for him too. They didn't even have Jalen Waddle, like you said, and this result is all orchestrated by the man leading the MVP discussion right now, and it's not a fluke that he's in front, because I think he's in outstanding form. He obviously has the weapons to maintain that form, but Tua Tagovailoa has been fantastic. He's constantly like, for someone who's not considered an elite-level quarterback, he's one of the most criticized quarterbacks in the league, because he's constantly questioned for his
availability,
durability, his fitness, his arm strength is always questioned. But you can tell his connection with Tyreek Hill and a lot of these guys at the moment is absolutely peaking, and that's why they're getting the results they're getting.
He went and got the Samoan sleeve over the offseason, and that thing's been blessed.
He saw what happened to Dan Hooker getting tatted up, and he's like, let me get my weapons.
That's going to make me tougher. And it has, man. And in this game, 309 yards on 88.5% completion and 4 touchdowns. Yeah, the Miami Dolphins are good, man. Their defense maybe a little bit dodgy still, especially in the pass game, because
if you give up points and you can score more, you're still
winning. That's what I'm saying. They're averaging 23.7 points conceded against them, which is 21st in the league. But when you're, what, getting 70 points of your own, I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Nah. Tua was within the MVP conversation early last year, and he is super underrated, like you said, throughout the league. But I love what it's done for the brothers and, like, the community, because heaps of those guys love their 49ers gang.
Yeah.
But they're getting behind Tua right now, and it's actually pretty sick to see. Yeah. I've gotten like heaps of messages from guys I used to work with the police, and they're like, bro, are you watching Tua right now? And
you're talking Usos.
The brothers.
Oh, the bros.
Yeah. So it's good to see. And Miami, it's sunny out there throughout the season. It's going to be entertaining.
Island weather.
Tropical. Yeah.
Game we want to feature in the upcoming round. So my pick from last week, Vikings Chargers, was an absolute belter. Keenan Allen and Justin Jefferson's had themselves a day. But this week, you've taken a doozy, so I'll let you take that one. I'm going Steelers versus Texans. Kenny Pickett is up against CJ Stroud and the Texans. The Steelers are 2-1 and top of their division after beating the Raiders and the Browns and losing to the 49ers. Two really tough defenses in that one. The Texans have lost to the Ravens and the Colts, but they won last week against the Jags, and it is in Houston. So there's young receivers on full display and Pickens and Tank Dell, and a lot of young talent coming through the quarterback ranking as well. So this is a game to keep an eye on for the score and see what the future's doing, because these guys, Kenny Pickett, very underrated. CJ Stroud, I love what he's doing right now, and they've got some young offensive talent. So keep an eye on that score, because it'll be interesting.
Yeah, this is the game to see who's up next out of the young emerging teams. And I'm thinking it's going to be the Steelers, because Mike Tomlin is just a guy you trust, and it's kind of seeming like he's getting this young talent to a competitive level where they're going to be pushing maybe for playoff spots. I'm thinking more wild card. I don't think they're going to win the division, although they are right now.
Smoky, yeah.
They are
winning
the division right now, but I don't think it's going to end up that way. But yeah, shout out to both of those teams, because they're really kind of surprising a few people. I'm going Dolphins back to back to back with my highlights, and I'm going their highlight game against the Bills at the Bills, which is a tough test for the Dolphins offense, because the Bills' defense has been kind of rolling in the last couple of weeks, conceding just 13 points in both of the games and scoring 31 fantasy points last week. And also, it is a little colder up in Buffalo than in South Beach. So
those fans are fucking wild as well.
And it is a rabid fan base. So the Bills Mafia, you're kind of on that Bills Mafia?
Yeah, like that's my team, Buffalo. I like players, but I'm a Buffalo Bills fan.
Okay, there you go. Well, they've got a tough test, but I think it's going to be tougher for the Dolphins. They're not going to look as invincible on offense. And then also the Bills' offense has kicked back into gear too, with 37 and 38 points in their last two games respectively. And after a shocking start for Josh Allen, he's kind of kicked back into gear himself with four touchdowns and only one interception. I know he had, I think, three or four in the first game. Yeah, yeah. So he's kind of like equaled it out with
each
other.
He's got a cannon.
He does have a cannon.
Fire
and
it.
I trust his arm strength, and I also trust his running game, because he is a bulldozer of a runner, and he's a big boy. And we know what he can do with Stephon Diggs, who's averaging 93 receiving yards as well. Kind of going under the radar as one of the best receivers, because, man, he's just consistent every week. 93 receiving yards averaging, that's pretty good, man.
It's naughty.
And another guy who's pretty good that's kind of going under the radar is James Cook, Dalvin Cook's baby brother. He's averaging 89 rushing yards per game. So
I think he's fifth in the league for most rushing yards at the moment, which is crazy.
Surprising.
Yeah. And they needed a running back.
Yeah, yeah. Who did they? They lost Singletary.
Yeah, and they've never really had depth there.
Yeah.
So I think they had Zach Moss for a little bit, but there's no real standout.
Not a superstar talent like your Nick Chubbs or like your Derrick Henrys or something like that. So shout out James Cook. He's kind of filling the void that they need. And man, this game's got all the writings of an old-fashioned shootout. If it's not too cold, I can expect this being a fireworks game. So Dolphins at Buffalo, bring it on.
Yeah, I like that. Just before this, we were playing them against each other, playing with those teams in Madden, and we were firing away. Yeah, I was up over skiing, but power rankings. Last week, I had Dallas in at first place, 49ers in at second, Dolphins at third, Baltimore at fourth, and the Eagles in at fifth. Completely reshuffled. Number one, taking the first spot, Miami Dolphins. It's just a fucking powerhouse. 130 points, like you said, in 3 weeks. Absolutely ridiculous. In second place, I've got the 49ers. Third place, I've got the Eagles.
Okay.
Fourth place, I've got the Kansas City Chiefs with Miss Taylor Swift and Mr. Taylor Swift. And at fifth place, I've got Buffalo. So a team that I've just absolutely shot out of there.
Yep.
They're going to be that team again this year, the Dallas Cowboys. Okay. I'm not high on them right now. I feel like those are our top teams.
I tell you what, our list is looking very similar. So last week I had 49ers 1, Cowboys 2, Eagles 3, Kansas City 4, and number 5 was the Baltimore Ravens, which was a very boring list. It didn't change from week 1 to week 2.
No.
But there is changes from week 2 to week 3. At number 5, I agree. I have the Buffalo Bills sneaking in there. At number 4, I have the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yep.
Number 3, I have Miami Dolphins. So I have them up there, but not quite into first. I've still got the Kansas City Chiefs up there at number 2. I believe Taylor Swift adds a different element to this team.
But that was great. They were just like, Mahomes after the game and the interviews, he was just like, I understood the assignment.
Yeah.
Get Travis Kelce a touchdown. Yeah. And they put, was it like 40-something on it? She was going crazy out there with her, like, with his family and stuff. After the game, they're like...
Yeah, she's looking comfortable, right?
Yeah. And after the game, like... I think it panned to Mahomes and he's like doing a cheeky wave up to her. And then they like started going through all of the team and they were like, damn, she actually like, is that her?
Good on Patrick Mahomes, man. Tutties for tuggies. And number 1, still, I've got the San Francisco 49ers. So a bit of changes this week and this, but the same number 1 because I'm super high on them. Dallas Cowboys falls right out. Same with you.
Yeah, not.
Just got a little bit exposed there and the offense is... It's looked good, but not like high quality like the rest of these 5 teams. So. Yeah,
I don't trust them. Triple dip touchdown parlay. Last week I had Jalen Waddle, who was ruled out. So we just had DK Metcalf against the Panthers, CeeDee Lamb against the Cardinals at $5.50, and we went down there. This week, you're going to absolutely hate me on this one. I'm going to kick it off with Justin Fields. Not the best season for him, and a lot of noise going on in Chicago. The Broncos, though, they were absolutely atrocious last week in the run game and gave up 2 touchdowns the week before that. And what is Justin Fields' best asset?
Oh, his legs.
It's not his arm. Yeah. It's his legs.
Oh, it's definitely not his arm.
Nah, he's already had one this season, so... I'm going to ride him one more time, and I'm going to say he gets a touchdown in this one.
You're Jalen doing the Hurts. Old Rabideaus again, waiting for the green light. Yeah.
Jalen Hurts, that scrum belongs in the Rugby World Cup right now, and Washington gave up a touchdown to Josh Allen just last week as well, so I'm going to back him in there. And Christian McCaffrey, he scored a touchdown in 12 consecutive games.
Yeah.
The Cardinals have given up 3 rushing touchdowns in their last 3 weeks. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm going them. Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, Christian McCaffrey, lock them in. As for the 49ers, if you want to sweeten it up a little bit, the last 3 weeks in a row, they've scored exactly 30 points. Back them in for 30 again. I think against the Cardinals, the last time they played, I think it was they finished with 38 or 32.
Yeah, so. I could definitely see them getting 30 quick and then kind of easing off like they have been in their first 3 games this season. My multi, I've also got Christian McCaffrey because those stats don't lie. 12 touchdowns in 12 consecutive rounds. You got to just back him. He's kind of a lock at this point. Then I had Keenan Allen as the Chargers take on the Raiders. The Raiders have kind of looked a bit dodgy, and Keenan Allen's had a hell of a season to start right now. And Justin Herbert, we know he's got the laser. So I think he's going to find the big target that is Keenan Allen in the end zone. And then finally, I had Justin Jefferson because... Like Keenan Allen, he is a sensational player. The Vikings take on the Panthers, and the Panthers have looked a little bit dodgy in their backfield as well. Jefferson doesn't get a whole lot of touchdowns, but I can see
him... He gets yards and he gets touches and targets.
So. Yeah, and I could see this being the game where he's due one. So it's not the best strategy to take a multi with, but we're using it here.
And we're due one. I like it though. Lock it up. Enjoy the NFL this weekend. As for the UFC, so we went head-to-head again.
Yeah. And you got
came up.
Simon, I needed you for some help, bro. If you had been here to pick Fazeev, then...
No, I would have picked Gamrot too.
Oh, okay. Well, you got
great
it right.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, I mean, you both had it exactly as a leg injury in round round 2 by TKO, right?
In a multi that I put together with a group, you got like a multi syndicate. I picked it to be decision either way was my leg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I was waiting for, was it just to be a brutal 5-round war. And it was looking that way to start with, but...
Yeah, you know. it could have been that way, but unfortunately for kind of everyone watching, Gamrot gets the result due to what seems to be a torn ACL, by the way.
Something.
The way he first threw the kick, he kicked and it kind of hit the elbow, and I thought he had broken his foot on the contact.
Same.
So I was...
Was it like that Tawira Kobalo when he did the box kick and just... Fully hyperextended it.
It kind of looked like he went down and his foot was a little bit limp. So I was like, oh, he's broken his foot
Yeah.
But on further inspection in the replay, they slow-mo it, and he throws the kick, and as he's pivoting, because obviously you need a lot of torque, you see his knee do the typical ACL test, bop, bop, and
we're all holding our knees, as we say.
Gone. So really unfortunate for Rafael Fiziev, who was looking good, man. Yeah, I thought he won the first round, and
the numbers say it.
His takedown defense was ridiculous, man. His flexibility was kind of making me tear my hamstring on the couch because I don't know how he was getting his leg all the way over his head.
12 o'clock.
To defend those takedowns. And he was looking fast. He was looking powerful with his combos when countering. Mm-hmm. Good body kicks, like we said, would be a factor in this fight. It's real unfortunate the way it ended. But to Gamrot's credit, he wasn't too bad himself in the striking. He kind of was landing like jabs himself, and straight shots were actually getting through. Leg kicks were also landing pretty well. His defense was a little better defending the body kicks. His elbow got down. He still ate a hell of a lot of body kicks, but he looked kind of improved. So it is really unfortunate for both parties the way it finished, the way it did. Obviously, Gamrot's going to take a win, and he was cheering, and he was
those results, happy about it. They always suck.
Yeah, I know. But I think he was of the same assumption everyone else, that he checked the kick and he snapped his leg.
He said in the office.
So, I mean, no one's going to celebrate.
I've been working on my defense.
That's right. Yeah.
So, what was your takeaway on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I was really hyped for this fight because I just knew that the way these guys were going to exchange on the feet was going to bring fireworks. And the first round was exactly how I thought it was going to go. Fiziev had the forward pressure. He was, trying to land these kind of combos. And late in the first round, he hit Gamrot just out of the blue with this 5 or 6 body head combination that was just
pop, pop, pop.
Yeah, pop, 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 pop. And it was, and I was like, oh my God, this level.
The speed's ridiculous.
Yeah. But like you're saying, some of those jabs when Fiziev was trying to enter and Gamrot was just sticking him right in the face.
Wasn't too bad.
Yeah. Like he really felt it. So I was thinking, this was going to be a really back and forth battle. And I thought, oh man, if Gamrot gets this down, I think because of the similarities on the feet, that would be the edge. But like you said, Fiziev's takedown defense meant that the whole first round basically was on the feet for a lot of it. It's hard to gain a lot of who outperformed because it was really close. I think I gave Fiziev the first round. He outstruck him. He had the more kind of damaging blows,
more popping shots. They sounded a little bit more impactful.
Yeah. But I mean, it is a shame for everybody. The only person who's happy about it is Gamrot.
Where were you seeing that result going based on the first two rounds? Because in round two, Gamrot did take down Fiziev, but he couldn't keep him there, which is very surprising considering how good of a grappler Gamrot is. Fiziev was able to get back up, which is a testament to how far he's come along in that department. But where'd you see this one ending up? Because Fiziev is known to slow down ever so slightly later into fights, and Gamrot just
pushes the pace.
And he maintains a very good pace and is super fit and durable. So.
See, that's what I think was going to happen. I think that the round two and three, Fiziev really tries to get up on the scorecard, but what I think was going to happen is that Fiziev would gas out, Gamrot would be able to get those takedowns easier, and then you'd see maybe rounds 3, 4, and 5 being a lot of ground control where Gamrot has a lot of damaging strikes and gets the kind of split or unanimous decision. That's where I think it was going to go.
I have to agree. I think Gamrot was probably going to get a decision because I was actually kind of impressed by his... Obviously, Fiziev has the ability to turn the lights out at any moment because of how quick and how powerful he is. But I was just impressed... Well, not impressed, but I think he was good enough to defend a lot of the shots that Fiziev could potentially put him out with.
The distance management was all right. I mean, he's going up against a shorter dude, so that makes it easier. But he was keeping the range all right, and there was just a few moments where the speed was the dictator and the combinations that allowed Fiziev to get those clean shots landed. But that speed would drop, the distance would get harder to close later
like
in the fight.
It did in the Gaethje fight.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, everything from those first few rounds was leaning towards a Gamrot decision, but Fiziev definitely could have just shut him up at any moment.
Yeah. And maybe he maintained a good pace, Fiziev. Who knows? He might have been working on his cardio.
Yeah, exactly. We'll never know.
We'll never know, which is real unfortunate. And unfortunately, if we look into the future, Fazeev is going to be out a long time. So I haven't even bothered to look up what is really next for him, because who knows what the division looks like in a year's time when he comes back.
I have some names, but yeah, that they probably all want to fight before he comes back.
Yeah. What would you like to see?
Well, I was looking at the rankings and, you know, he's probably going to have to look down. Definitely going to have to look down. And there's some interesting names. Hooker's there. You know, he's just come off a good win against Jalen Turner.
That would, sorry to cut you off, that would actually be interesting if the New Zealand card does happen and Hooker fights him here.
Yeah. I don't think he'll be able to turn around after a torn ACL that quickly. Well, Tony Ferguson did it, but that counts a different animal.
What date are they looking at the New Zealand card?
February, it might have been.
I mean, they're probably gonna get Kai to headline that, it seems like.
Yeah, so it makes sense. Well, Hooker's right there, man.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Hooker's up there too. He just beat Turner, so he's top 10.
Yeah, and he's got probably a bigger fan base than Kai at this point.
Yeah, Hooker versus McGregor.
But then, you know, the guy that Hooker just beat, Turner's probably looking for a good scrap. That would be a good option for him. The other one is Armin Sarukian. I'd like to see that.
Well, yeah, those are all, I mean, that division's, I think Armin's going to go up. Hooker and Turner could be in the realm of possibility. I see them as like middle tier dwellers. They could still be around the ranking that Fazeev would be likely to take on when he comes back. But in terms of Gamrot, he had a name on his lips. He called out Charles Oliveira. And I was kind of looking
up to
it is a bit much, but I was looking at the roster and the rankings, and he's kind of doing it on the basis that Oliveira loses to Makachev, which I'm a huge Oliveira fan, but unbiasedly I think Makachev's probably going to win that again. I think you might give it to him, like Oliveira coming off a loss, his stock isn't going to be as high.
This guy can come through and
So I don't actually mind the call out, considering that Oliveira loses to Makachev.
Yeah, well, I mean, we know that
if he wins, no, definitely.
Yeah. We know Conor's not fighting this year. And Dana came out and said, you know, that he's marked to fight next year, and that if Chandler gets antsy, they'll team up a fight. Chandler versus Gamrot would be very interesting, because you know you've got another guy there who can shut the lights out any moment with Chandler, but also a good wrestling base, a very low center of gravity, similar to Fazeev. But you know, I think he would do really well. The other guy who's just come off a loss, Dustin Poirier, that's another name that you could throw out there for Gamrot to, you know, both those two dudes would say to the UFC that Gamrot is a real top five contender. Like if he can beat one of those two dudes, he's definitely earned a title shot.
The only thing I did consider Poirier, but Poirier trains at ATT with Gamrot, and Gamrot said in his interview that he doesn't want to fight anyone at ATT until it's for a title.
Fair enough. All right, well then, yeah, give him Chandler.
Yeah, Killcliff, those are rivals, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then that gives Conor enough time to piss clean, and then Chandler, Chandler doesn't worry about
it, though. His head's pretty huge now. But yeah, so there's no UFC this weekend, unfortunately, but if you are still a fight fan and you need to get your fix, Canelo Alvarez is taking on Jermell Charlo this weekend in boxing, so I think that'll be around about 2 p.m. on Sunday. So
nice.
No UFC, but get around some boxing with Canelo Alvarez.
The only thing that just on the topic of UFC just came out the other day is poor Mark Hunt, man, got shafted. The court case decision came out. They ruled in favor of the UFC. So he gets no money, and also is probably going to have to fork out heaps for the UFC's lawyer fees. So I mean, if anybody's listening, this is not sure what that's all about. It's because of the fact that Mark Hunt fought Brock Lesnar, and he alleges that the UFC was full aware that he was not natural.
And so were.
Yeah, exactly. And so that they should.
Conor's not natural.
Yeah, they are aware of certain people,
So, I mean, and I haven't looked into the full details of it, but I mean, there's a documentary about Mark Hunt's life, and they cover that whole court case, and it's ruined his life, basically, because he's just sat there and been in this court battle for what could be close to a decade now. I don't know. It's been a while. When did he fight?
UFC 200. The last time he fought would have been around about 2014.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Brock Lesnar fight was UFC 200, I believe. So, it's been a while.
Yeah.
That's a doozy.
Well, hopefully he can, like, bounce back and fight Pangai Jr. or something.
That would be cool to see. To have Mark Hunt be the absolute enforcer of these, you know, these guys that want to come out of the rugby league community.
The gatekeeper. He beat Sonny Bill. He's still got it in him.
The gatekeeper.
I mean, there's still a massive market for Mark Hunt walk-off KOs. I mean, Justin Tuff is out there and Junior are there trying to bring it back. But, I mean, there ain't nothing like a Mark Hunt walk-off TKO. So.
That's another one in the books for us. So, SJ got robbed in the Dally M's. Up the wires. Next year's our year. But enjoy the NRL Grand Final this weekend. Yeah. New Zealand taking on Italy. It's going to be absolute belter. And enjoy the NFL come Monday as well. Got an early one tomorrow as well. So, yeah, get around that. And we'll see you all next week. Peace.
Peace out.